Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Ben Gissel here, hanging out with Henry.
Oh,
thank you. I'm doing my Bigfoot cry for JW.
Very good. Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, we're absolutely nothing. Today's guest, he is the author of many books, but the most recent book is The United States of Cryptids. JW Walker is with us. JW, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I am jazzed about this. This is great.
I just actually find it kind of interesting that we can even capture you.
Mm-hmm.
And we can
I am
see
a
you
bit elusive, usually. Yes.
Well, honestly, though, are you a primate? I'm just going to get here. Are you a primate or are you interdimensional?
Primate. Definitely primate.
Excellent.
Interesting indeed. We often talk about how Casey Anthony is a 10 when it comes to murderers. But in real life, she's about a 6, you mm-hmm. know. But when it comes to cryptid zoologists or cryptologists,
cryptozoologists.
Fantastic.
He's learning.
You're about an 11. You're
yeah,
a very
attractive
handsome.
Man. Very handsome.
Actually, it seems as if you're clean. And I know there's a lot of times.
I didn't know this kind of podcast.
Yes. Within the cryptid contingency, there's some.
What do you
people,
got underneath the Zoom? I can't see below the belt.
Yeah. There's some people who resemble the skunk ape or maybe the Mothman in more than one way, specifically when it comes to odor. But you're very well kept.
Well, I cheat, though. So those people actually do the real work of looking out in the forest and the swamps and the fields to find these things. I just go to the local tavern and see what cryptid-themed beers they have behind the bar.
That's incredible.
So I'm not that good of a cryptozoologist.
That's called the power of being the executive.
Absolutely.
you're leading them. Can I ask just straight up, we'll do one of the, you know, it's a hacky question, but like, what brought you to here? Like, what got you to the point where you're a professional cryptozoologist?
Well, that's the thing. So I'm not a professional cryptozoologist. I'm a professional faker,
I guess. Yep. Great.
So I basically chase oddities, anything weird I wanted to learn about and write books about. And it could be anything. It could be paranormal stuff. It could be art installations.
You're like an expert on Edgar Allan Poe as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So I spent a year of my life tracking down every site, building piece of him that still existed on the planet, everywhere he lived. So yeah, it's just something weird and different and not, you know, me in a cubicle and, you know, whatever for it.
Was it just about that? Was it just about like trying to not be a cubicle warrior or is it something deeper?
A cubicle warrior.
Yep.
That sounds cool, actually.
Sure. A lot of guys become cubicle warriors, but it's bad.
Yeah, it really is.
Oh, yeah. No, for me, it's mostly depression and boredom. Yeah, a lot of that. And when they just left my apartment, which I actually lived... I'm from Maryland. I was living in a small little town, the next town over from the Blair Witch town, actually.
Oh, wow.
And I just realized I was like in a bad spot. So I just left my apartment one day and started driving to weird stuff and writing about weird stuff. And then suddenly, over the course of years, it turned into a thing. So
that's awesome.
I'm not complaining. Yeah.
Were you able to dabble in opium when you were experiencing everything that Edgar Allan Poe experienced? Did you dabble in what he was dabbling in?
I did not. I did not try to become an opiate addict, although it's one of my many failings, so honestly.
Yeah, honestly, you got to get in the headspace.
You really do.
So let's talk cryptids. Now, you wrote this book. Now, this is kind of, this book is, it is a little bit of an encyclopedia of sorts, right? Like you do definitely, you have chapter heads, but as you go through the world of cryptids, I guess that's what it is. You know, on last podcast on left, we've been covering various level of cryptids for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big question that always seems to come to mind is, how materially real do you believe something is? And especially like, or like, you know, in terms of...
Well, I suppose it could vary as well between what cryptid is, you know, the Loch Ness versus Sasquatch
that's
or
kind of
New
my
Jersey
idea.
Devil.
Like, in your spectrum of cryptids, what feels, quote unquote, materially real?
Yeah.
And what is more in the realm of what we joked about up top, maybe something interdimensional? Or is there something to like folklore coming to life?
Yeah, which cryptid could you actually have sex with?
Save well, that for the end, if you would.
We need some anticipation on that one. So yeah, well, the thing is, I'll give you some obvious answers. Sorry about that. But the obvious answer is anything underwater that you can't see all the time, right?
Yes.
The truth is, you know, cryptids happen all the time, right? Where the Kraken, right, was just a mystery that nobody knew about. And then suddenly now we have giant cephalopods and tanks in the Smithsonian, right? So that's a real one. The gorilla was a cryptid at one time. Like there was rumors of this giant, hairy, dark creature in jungles that nobody believed in most of the world. Obviously, some people knew about it until somebody went and found the pelts and found some skulls and brought it back to the rest of the world. The platypus is my favorite one, right? That's another one that was a rumor that nobody believed except for some people in this island down the corner of the corner of the world. They found a body, brought the body out to the rest of the world. And the rest of the world was like, this what? Is not real. You made this.
Right.
You sewed a duck's bill into a beaver's body. So they actually had to get a live animal for them to believe that creature existed. So those kind of cryptids do exist. Like the actual, like not, because the definition of a cryptid is an animal that mainstream science doesn't accept as real or is real anymore. And that happens all the time. So they do exist. Now, the more fanciful you get, right, then you get to the range of like extremely plausible biological entities, right? These are giant primates, right? Because all of us are primates right here. So they exist. You know, primates exist.
Yes.
You just make them a little bigger, a little hairier, and throw them on the forest. And that doesn't stretch your imagination. Right. Then you go all the way to like a snallygaster. Then you're kind of like stretching your imagination a bit. So it's a nice little spectrum, which makes a lot of fun.
Now, what's a snallygaster?
You don't know a snallygaster?
No, educate him.
Oh, snallygaster. This is a good one. This is one from Western Maryland. So snallygaster looks like a chicken and a dragon mated and is choking on an octopus. So it's got a beak. It's got tentacles coming out of the beak. It's got wings, leathery wings. And it's just rumored to fly around, you know, Western Maryland. And I think the biggest story about it is the most known one died in a giant vat of moonshine. It just got caught. The smell was good, went down there, got boiled. And then the moonshine police or whatever they're called came in and blew up the entire place to evidence of the body.
That's fun as hell. Yeah, that's because that's the idea. They're like, well, you know, you would have seen one. You would have seen one if it wasn't for that explosion. Can't believe what happened.
Yeah. Moonshine's a great preservative. We'd have had a body and everything.
What a way to go for the snallygaster.
I remember they have those things. You ever see those at bars where they have like the toe in the thing of liquor and then you have to take the shot and you have to let the toe hit your lips?
Yes,
like
indeed.
That style. But this actually maybe brings me to you write articles for Atlas Obscura, which I do love. And there was one recently that you wrote, like, I feel like that fits perfectly into this idea of like could be materially real because they thought it was one thing, but then it became a cryptid. The Shunkawarakan, right? The Rocky Mountain hyena.
So the Shunkawarakan is interesting because it's based on a real event. All cryptids, this is the beauty of cryptids. Even if you don't believe in a snallygaster or Pukwudgie or some of the more random ones.
Yeah.
The event happened. Whatever they saw kicked off a giant mania that lasted sometimes a summer, sometimes a year, sometimes years. And the newspapers followed them. Local newspapers followed the story the entire time. So something happened. It's documented its history. Even if you don't believe the source of the history, it's a real thing. So
we just saw this happen with the new wave of the Mothman sightings in Chicago and outside of that area. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's in the newspapers now. Like somebody saw something, whatever it was, saw it, and now somewhat of a hysteria happened. Not the old kind of hysteria in the 50s and 70s and 60s where you jump in. I call it hunting parties and parties where either you jump together and go chase it, or you just party, sing a party around it. Yeah, exactly. Shotguns and moonshine in the back of the car. So, yeah, so the Shunkawarakan is a great example. It was a real creature that a farmer had a problem with, ended up shooting it, and didn't really fit any creatures he'd seen. It was vaguely canine, maybe hyena, kind of dogish. It was one of those like really vague canine creatures.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the story got passed out. It got connected to Native American lore, as they always do. They always get connected to Native American lore. And then eventually there's a body. They had a body somewhere in a museum, I think somewhere in Montana these days.
Well, so if you look at here, I got the picture. I could show Kissel, right? So they have
cute.
It because they ended up calling it the ring docus, right?
It's another word for it. Yeah, it has seven different names, I think. Gaius is another one. It's got a lot of names.
But it was in a museum for a hot minute, right? And they said, I guess they got rid of it. And there was this one picture of it. And so you look at it, and like what we cover on the, you know, we talk about the chupacabra kind of often, but most of the time when we talk about chupacabra, we're talking about a dog with mange.
Sad ass dog.
Yeah, the dog's all fucked up. And it does just kind of look like, I'm not a scientist, but I look
You're
at
not?
It. No. And the first time I look at it, the first thing I say is, that's a jacked up wolf. Like he's jacked up. That's all I got.
No, that's the other thing. If we do have a body, it's usually taxidermied, and often taxidermied not very well, because you can definitely make any animal pelt look like a mutated creature and with whatever. Level of skill, you know?
Yeah, just being bad at it.
Right, exactly.
You can create whole realms of mystery. Do you think that, like, that's why, like, this is my question, because I love cryptids, and like you must be passive, because like on one level, do you make judgment calls about whether things are real, or you're just like, I just collect stories?
No, I don't usually make, I'm a skeptic at heart, a sad skeptic. I'm a sad skeptic at heart. Like I'm really sad that I've never had a ghost experience, even though I spent a big period of my life in abandoned asylums and abandoned prisons and graveyards and ghosts. I feel like I'm like, I'm sixth sense blind or something like that. So I'm really sad about it.
I've been told that I'm too horny for the phenomena.
Yeah, he's too horny because of aliens, ghosts.
I want to see it. And I can never, I can never see it. I saw an orb.
He says he saw an orb, but we've seen the picture and that's up for debate.
It was square.
No, it was. I saw, besides the picture I took, I saw a ghost train. See? I saw a ghost train. I saw an orb. I'll describe it to you. Mm-hmm. I was driving outside of, it was in Atlanta, and there was a train. It was literal train tracks. And I saw a thing that looked like a wobbling beach ball that went up and down in sort of a weird, like, hovering pattern down the railroad track. And when I brought it up in the show, I had several people being like, that's called a ghost train.
It's a ghost train. So as we just heard, it makes people sound insane, right? When they talk about cryptids or orbs, how do you maintain sanity in this world of madness?
Because the two reasons. I'll get a little sentimental at first, then I'll get back to like what we should be. But one is that when somebody tells me they believe in Bigfoot, I don't hear like, you know, tinfoil hat. What I hear is somebody saying, I want cooler stuff in the world. I want the world to not be like kind of ripped apart of all its wonder. Like I want more mysteries to be uncovered. I don't want everything zoned for a McDonald's franchise. I want more stuff out there. So to me, like the pursuit of cryptids is like wonder, which is one of the most amazing parts of being a human. So I feel that kinship with them. Like I also don't want there to be every single animal already cataloged. I don't want that to happen ever in my lifetime. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that part. Then the other part about it is whether the stories are true or not, the outcomes are real. Like, for instance, a big part of the book is, like you guys said, this is basically, in some ways, my book is a cryptid encyclopedia, a cryptid encyclopedia comes out every year, right? Every year somebody makes one. The difference with mine was, I only do it if I could travel and see things. There are entire towns, entire groups of people that celebrate their cryptids so hard that they have statues dedicated to them and festivals every year and plaques and just it's a real phenomenon. So right now in Indiana, Churubusco, Indiana, every year they celebrate this giant turtle that was supposedly found in a pond outside of town in the late 1950s. So for the past 60 years, they've been celebrating a gigantic turtle. And you can go there any time of year to Churubusco, and there's like turtles everywhere because of this. So that is real. That celebration is real. The turtle statues outside the dentist's office is real.
And it kind of makes it real. It kind of
makes it real.
There's something about, because we talk about in tulpas, that comes up. Like in some way, it's almost like you are creating a living thought form that is real. And then it's also, it's much needed tourism for a lot of these places.
Absolutely.
It helps people come and show up. And that's why I got no problems with it. We talk about the Boggy Creek Monster.
Yes.
That was like another kind of an example that it's like, they have a Bigfoot economy.
Yeah. Yeah, I went down to the Folk Monster Mart as part of this. And it was just fantastic. I'm glad that thing exists.
Rise from your grave.
Well, so I believe there's maybe I'll throw this at you. All right. Let's say tantamount. I'm using the word tantamount.
Tantamount,
right?
In what?
I don't know.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. Bigfoot, let's say it's real. Let's say it is real. Or the idea of giant apes are real that are hidden. How do they stay hidden? Like, what is, like, is there a thing where, like, do you really sit and, like, is that your goal? To like hammer out like whether or not something's like real or not. Like, would you want that? Like, I know you're saying you want to keep the mystery alive, but is there that in the pursuit of making it real?
Like, how did this start with tantamount?
I don't know. But it's like, how did you like where do you sit with that? Like, because I think that Bigfoot's like of all of the cryptids, it's like, well, that sounds most like, quote, like you said at the top, plausible. Like it sounds like a thing that could be real.
So the question is, how they hiding?
Yeah. I hope it's because the world is bigger than I think it is. There's part of me thinking there's no way they're hiding, right? But I'm hoping that it's just a bigger world than I really think it is. Like a forest is massive. And I don't really understand how big, like, whatever, the forest out in the Pacific Northwest is. But the weird thing about that is there's been a Bigfoot sighting in all 50 states, right? At least one. That includes tiny Delaware and tiny Rhode Island and Hawaii out in the middle of the ocean. So those kind of places, I'm like, I don't know if you can hide a Bigfoot in Delaware. Maybe you can. I don't know. But like, hopefully you can hide one in Appalachia, right? That's an undiscovered country, I hope. I hope we haven't like explored all of that. But I assume the world's gigantic. I hope it is. It might not be, but that's how I would say it. It's just big.
What do you think? What does the cryptid tell us about the region? Obviously, Pacific Northwest, you got a lot of trees. That's good. That's good for your big. That's good for your Bigfoot.
Definitely Bigfoot country.
And then maybe you got a lot of lakes. You got lake creatures. What does it tell you about the region and how do cryptids relate to it?
Yeah, it's where you can hide them, right? Because like you said, how do you hide these cryptids? So generally, most cryptids started, the golden age of cryptids is the 1950s to 1970s. That's when most everything was seen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then where they were usually seen was rural towns, with some exception, but mostly it was rural towns. Almost every single story of a cryptid, no matter what it is, starts with some teenagers in the back of a car on a back road out at night, you know, outside of town. Every single one starts that way. Mm-hmm. And the reason is you need a few things. You need some kind of natural landscape for the thing to hide in, right? So rural towns have that. They have forests, they have mountains, they have fields, they have places to hide it. And then you need the boredom to make it a story, right? And rural towns have that as well. But right now, right, I found out there's a cryptid running around my town. I'm in Nashville, New Hampshire, which is about 40 miles north of Boston. Oh. If I heard there's a cryptid running around my town, I might get off my phone and go find it or jump in my car, or I might, I probably won't. I'll probably just follow it on Twitter and see what happens, you know? But back then, you'd all get in your cars, it'd be a party. The town center would be filled with people talking about it and the local newspapers writing about it.
So it's like real life. It's like real life Pokemon Go.
No, it's exactly what it is. Exactly. And that's actually why I think we have so many different kinds of creatures. It's not just Bigfoot. There's like in the book, I found like more than 70, and most of them are very different because we want to collect them all. Right. We don't want it just to be the United States of Bigfoot. We want Chukarokan and Snallygasters and Puckwudgies and every kind of creature we can find.
How do you think we get, like, I guess that's where it is in my mind. Like I'm trying to kind of, I think about cryptids and how they are so different. And I wonder, like where does that come from? Like, I guess it, like, is it really just a response to the natural environment? Is it something that people have inside that they project out? Because I do believe that the phenomena on some level is quote unquote real. But I think that it has something to do with kind of some interdimensionality, which is if you listen to John Keel, like we kind of participate in it. Right. Like we help bring it out. Like, how do we get such variety in cryptid? And then like, what do we do about the really crazy ones? Like, you know, you said about the Snallywag, like that's a crazy one. Like, but is that because like they do see something like that? Can something exist like that for a moment in time and then not exist ever again? Or is it a bunch of people just like, again, just trying to create some of that cryptid flow?
No, that's tantamount.
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 I would say it's mostly Hollywood. That's who decides all the creatures. Now, there actually is a lot of theories of different kinds of creatures that came out that looked remarkably like a movie creature that came out a year before. Chupacabra is actually that one, not the dog version, but the Puerto Rican chupacabra.
Yeah,
Puerto
Rican
version one. The Wolf Woman of Alabama came out like right when the commercials for Mephisto Waltz came out, which is this trippy 70s movie. And one scene, the trailer had this dog with a human head on it walking around. Cool. But I think the variety just comes from, that's a good question. I've never been asked that question. Why do we have the variety of creatures we do have? That has to be in, so obviously we have some very similar carryover, right? Hairy primates, lake monsters are almost always boiled down to plesiosaurs. And I think it comes from fantasy. I don't know, it's a good question. I want to say the evolution is fantasy until you find something in science to hang it on, right? So,
because they don't know, because like when someone's in a rural town, like, because those before the internet connected everybody, I think it's interesting is that it's not like they were looking for a gap. Like, we haven't had a big turtle one yet. All right, let's make it up. Like, it seems that like they do kind of spontaneously come up with all of these different forms.
Yeah, it could be. And I know there's a subsection of cryptids called lumberjack tales, right? And these creatures came out of tales that lumberjackers would go into the forest in the 19th century, right? Dark forest, middle of nowhere, no electricity, no internet, nothing, right? They're just out there. They'd hear sounds, things would happen, and they would spend their time around the campfire making up personalities and creatures for what would make that sound or what would do this thing. And you get stuff like hodags out of that. And you get, you get stuff like Walker's cats out of that. Yeah. And hodags, like Rhinelander, Wisconsin celebrates the hodag like it's a military veteran. They have statues of it and they have Christmas merchandise and they have festivals every year. So sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's just human imagination. And sometimes it's the ability, the human mind to make patterns. So if you see something rustle in the bushes, you know, what does it look like? Like the infield horror looks like a beat up kangaroo. That came from one person's description of it. Right. So the human mind is great at creating variety, I think.
Yeah, and of course, around the lumberjacker, it's a great day to be a tree, if you know what I'm talking about. When it comes to...
Why don't do this to the man. This man's worked so hard on his book.
I have a serious question. True. We're killing all of our animals. We're killing all the bugs. The human race is destroying a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like because we have destruction of so much wildlife that cryptids are almost filling a void? Where it's like, no, we're not destroying everything. There's still these cryptids out there that they exist because I was just reading an article. 75% of all the shit that was in like 1800s is dead.
That's why that cryptids solid. Are our and apology to the planet.
I think it is. Yeah, I think that they are because they're like, yeah, we've killed so much stuff, but
we're making up new ones with our brain.
We got new ones with our minds.
Yeah.
I like it. We're all going virtual reality, right? We're all metaverse. So like all of our creatures should be metaverse too.
Oh,
I
my
do,
goodness.
But I do sort of believe that that's kind of there. That is a kind of explanation for some of this stuff. Like we talk about the Sandown clown. There's a couple of these like super weird shit, right? Like when it's super weird and you have like several people say like the Flatwoods Monster, you know, like something like that where you're like, what in the living fuck did these people see? Because it's like they're all freaked out and weird. And yeah, they can make it up. But it's also like I also sort of believe in the idea of screen memories. I know that's true. Like people say they experience something because it's to cover up something traumatic. So they'll, they project something else onto it. But it's so crazy just like how easy it is for people to project stuff onto like their reality and have it show up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good example, too, because the skeptics always, I think Joe Nickel mostly, the skeptics call the Flatwood Monster a owl in a tree, right?
Whatever.
To go from an owl in a tree to a red domed alien in a skirt, robot alien in a skirt, that's a big jump. So either like there's a totally wrong explanation or the human mind, like you said, can build whatever it needs to out of the materials at hand.
I wonder. But
some are super weird though, for sure.
You did write a book. You wrote a book called The 12 Nights of Rotherhouse where you stayed in a place, right? Like you just decided to be like, hey, I'm gonna see a ghost, right? Is that the kind of, was that the idea?
Where
like,
that was actually. So I'm also a novelist, but in that case, it started out as a nonfiction project where I was like, you know what?
Yes.
I'm gonna stay 12 nights, or it was actually 13 nights inside of a haunted place and just document my experiences. I'm a nonfiction writer mostly. I'm gonna do this. And I sat down and found a place I wanted to do it and started planning it. And then I realized this is gonna be the most boring book that anybody's ever written in their entire life. It'd be me just walking around dark hallways, like just jumping at sounds. Hmm. So then I just turned it into a novel and made it more.
But have you tried the investigation? Like, so when you were there, though, like I'm saying the same thing, like kind of like it's weird how you'd think that you're an expert on all of this phenomena. Your brain would provide something for you.
Yeah.
And really give it to me.
I don't know. I think I just broke into the belief factor. And not just with like paranormal, with like belief in like the goodness of humans and like whatever positive. I don't believe in anything really. So like I'm like a universal cynic. But yeah, I feel like I should have even one story that I could exaggerate into like this amazing paranormal experience. Right. And I don't even have that level of imagination.
Yeah, Henry's requesting you to lie is what that request is.
I'm hoping.
Which is just fine. But don't
no,
you
no,
think?
No, it's show business.
Show business.
That's right. You and every producer making a reality show, right?
Well, there's what so if much, it was real, JW? Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean no, listen,
How would you react? Switch it up. Recorded, by the way.
Lie. What if we did? So the thing is, we do live in a world of mystery. And these animals, like you were just discussing, are freaking trippy, dude. I watch a lot of my Instagram. I watch a lot of bug footage and animal footage. Isn't that something? But do you think if we actually saw the Mothman, how long would it take before we're like, yeah, that's the Mothman. Let's move on. It's boring.
Oh, seconds. I call that the curse of cryptozoology or the curse of the cryptozoologist, where you study this thing your entire life indirectly, right? Through footprints and first and tails and eyewitnesses and those kinds of things, never getting your hands on a body. You finally find it. You're like, look, I found the Mothman. And then zoologists and anthropologists come in and say, thank you, that's ours now. And suddenly it exists and it's not yours anymore. It's not a cryptid. Once you discover it, it's not a cryptid. So like it just stinks. It
so you
like
really can't
nothing.
You can't discover it.
You can't catch a cryptid. You cannot
you
catch
can't.
A cryptid. Literally.
No, and yeah. I mean here's a policy question. You know what I see a lot? Here's a
tantamount.
This is a policy question, right?
Where? What policy? What institution does he have policy on?
BFRO. Right.
Okay.
Right.
You might need to talk to my lawyers on this one. Yeah.
This is policy, JW.
So. Do you know BFRO? Like all those groups? Like it's like another. It's a Bigfoot hunting organization.
Oh, BFRO. So I've never spoken it. It's a BFRO. But that's fine.
Yeah, I'm sorry. BFRO. You're not cool like I am in the circles I run in. You know the lads down at BFRO? So sad.
Yeah, but BFRO just sounds like a place in Wisconsin where a bunch of fat dudes hang out.
It is. They talked about, they had a reaction to Oklahoma came out and they said that it's okay to hunt Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. Right, that was like a thing. They get this set up, this Bigfoot. Like, this is my thing. If we're seeing, I really mean this. Like, how do you feel about shooting Bigfoot?
That's not nice.
It's not nice, but I do want a body. I want a body really bad.
Yeah.
So I might, if I had morals, I might bend them a little bit for this one because I want to see.
You're going to end up like that doctor in Minneapolis who shot that fucking lion, dude. And then everyone's going to protest you and they're all going to be like, why'd you shoot Bigfoot? That was the only one left.
That's the thing. I'm okay with shooting the first Bigfoot. You can't shoot the second Bigfoot, though. Just the first.
The second Bigfoot needs to be on television.
Well, this is why it's hiding. This is why they don't want to be found. They're they horrified the of us.
No, I want to ask them what they think about the Ukraine conflict. And then I want to get them canceled.
Oh, that'll be good.
That's what we'll do, is we'll get Bigfoot canceled, and then he'll be on the show.
Oh, that'll be great. Do you think the sea or the center of the earth holds more cryptid life?
Oh, the sea has to, right? For some reason, the sea won't stop making creatures and won't stop making the most terrifying creatures on the planet. It just won't stop. Like, every time they find something new down the Marianas Trench, the thing looks like a nightmare, whether it's a vampire squid or things you've never even heard of. It's terrifying down there. So I'm pretty sure they're making it down there in the ocean. All the elements of life are down there, right?
The first person to see an octopus must have been scared, huh?
Absolutely. Oof. I would have been, unless you'd been like, there's a lot of arms to eat.
That's right. You're the first person to eat one, that's for sure.
I mean, I ate a whole octopus once. I went to this restaurant.
You tell this
terrible
story. I've heard this 1,000 times.
I hate this fucking.
An octopus brain and he got sick.
He got really nauseous. He was very big. It was a big floppy thing.
Did it taste good though?
No. I like octopus arms, but then it turned me off of octopus altogether. And then my wife said I can't eat octopus anymore because they're too smart. And I said, if they were so smart, why are they in the fucking tank?
Yeah, that documentary killed a lot of our hors d'oeuvres, unfortunately.
Yeah, a lot of pulpo went down because of that. Now, you've searched for a lot of cryptids, but if you found the most elusive cryptid of all, it's called love.
That's a good question. But I'm a cynic, so I don't know if that one exists. I'd probably find Bigfoot before I found love.
Yeah, I agree.
I say that as a joke because my wife is somewhere in this house. And
I heard her scream. I just heard her yell.
Just because you're married, it doesn't mean there's love there.
Ooh, but that's valid.
Sad,
that's
sad.
Super, it's true, though. Valid. Wow. I felt that, dude. I felt that right here.
Yeah, yeah. Look at the queen.
Dead. That's also a cryptid.
Dead.
Well, that plays into it when it comes to community. I was watching this documentary on flat earthers where ironically they prove the world is round. But one thing that stuck out to me was that these people are exceptionally lonely and they all got to get together and they'd be like, you're just flat. But really it was more about like these hors d'oeuvres are good. Do you feel like the cryptid community, that's like how big of a component is just that, the human connection?
Yeah,
when
I look for Bigfoot, cryptozoology. I look for a Bigfoot, but the most important thing were the friends I found along the way.
Exactly.
It's true, right? So like most fringe things is full of outsiders and misfits, right? Looking for connection, including myself. I include myself in that group. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny when you go to a cryptid festival or a cryptid convention, these people mostly aren't giving scientific papers on whether Bigfoot exists or not. There's some of that there, but most people are there to party. They're party. If you know the word hodag, you're a friend of theirs. They'll party with you. They don't care if you believe it or not. They want to draw it. They want to wear a shirt with it on it. And they just want to like party with people who aren't, you know, sitting on the sofa watching football on Sundays or going to the golf course on Saturdays. They want something else. And that's why they're awesome people. Like, again, they're just different. I'm always looking for different people. And so that's why I try to like hide out in these circles.
Hodag is a great name for a football team.
It really is.
The Washington Hodag. That's what they should have done with those freaking Commanders.
When you hang out with a lot of these other cryptid hunters, because like, so you're a journalist and a researcher, and like that's kind of what you are. But when you meet the hunters, like, what's the difference between you and them? Like, do you view them like as you said, like they're doing the dirty work, and you kind of like collect the data afterwards, or like, do you really like, well, that's a step too far, or do you see yourself in a couple of waders at Loch Ness like anytime soon?
Yeah,
like,
have you ever joined them on their journeys?
I have not. I have an aversion to dirt under my fingernails. It really bothers me. So I would do it. I didn't get a chance. So a lot of the book is written like some of the pandemic, post-pandemic, when everybody was like, just, you never knew what you could do. Honestly, what you're allowed to do or not do. So I didn't get to go. A lot of the festivals were canceled and it was like a massive time, but I would do it. I would go out. I compare cryptid hunting, like literal cryptid hunting, people that go out in the wilds to fishing. It's really boring. You can get something that's peaceful. You're out in the woods. That's nice. But at the end of the day, you're kind of standing in a spot standing in a spot most of the time. So, which is, again, that's real research. You sit there for, that's why in the paranormal world, some of the shows are funny because they go for like 6 hours and then they find everything. Real paranormal investigations would last years at one place, right? So it's just, they sound exciting. Let's go hunt Bigfoot. But in the end, you're just camping.
you're just drinking. It sounds fun.
Honestly, that is true.
I actually would rather do that than fishing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I will sit. Because I will sit and watch him go past. I mean, like, because it's just some guy who went, it was on my blur. 1979 was on right over that bridge. And it's like, I'll listen to him talk. I won't ask him about COVID. But like, I'll ask, but the rest of it's up for games. You know what I mean? We'll talk about everything. I think cryptid wise, it'll be really safe.
Well, you don't want, you're adverse to the truth. What do you think is the most likely to be real? UFOs, alien, well, UFOs are aliens, UFOs, or ghosts or cryptids?
I'm going to go with aliens. I'm going to go with aliens.
Well, do you ever, have you ever done any of the research about them all being connected? Like aliens and UFOs and UFOs and cryptids being sort of together, like in the same basket.
Yeah, that's the, what do they call that?
Ultra-terrestrials. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, look at that. We arrived at the same time. That's great. Yep. Yeah. What that is so Occam's razor is something like if you kind of rule out everything that doesn't make sense until all you have left is the only thing that makes sense. What a lot of people in the fringe, these fringe communities do, they go the opposite way. If something makes sense, they start adding stuff to it. So once you can't find Bigfoot, it's because he's a ghost or because he's an interdimensional being. And then once you can't find proof, you can't find the Roswell crash pieces, you're like, oh, maybe UFOs are part of that phenomenon too. Until you get to John Keel land, and you're just like, everything is hard to understand because everything is part of this weird phenomenon. And just, you kind of live there because there's no proof there. It's a fun place though. I like that place a lot. It's very fun.
Yeah.
You just need some weed tincture really helps. I'll tell you that.
It does. So that's kind of that connection that I think is a last gasp at, asserting everything exists that exists.
Well, so because they want an empirical version of the story, like they want it to be like solved, which I think is very difficult because I think what you're saying is true, is that the problem is that if you do solve, you've just solved yourself out of a job.
Yeah, it just sucks.
Yeah, because now it's gone. Like, what else are you going to do? You can't go on. You're no longer allowed on Ancient Aliens. It has been founded. You now have to go on the news.
Oh, and geez, they're asking you a bunch of other programming. That's a tragedy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You get to miss all that. You don't get to let Giorgio Tsoukalos sleep on your couch.
Oh, I love that man. Great hair, great bedhead.
Have you heard those stories?
Yeah, he totally sleeps. That's a good point, though. Success in those industries means not to usually get promotion when you're successful in your field, but like that's you get demoted right away. For that.
How much do you think that's true with the ancient alien theory? How it sort of like replaced religion for some people? Do you feel like cryptids kind of fill that void also?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're in a strange religion kind of kickback now, too. I don't know. Next generation
religion,
is bizarre.
Losing religion, for some reason, we have a giant, and I'm not religious. Well, I used to be, but I'm not religious but anymore. But like, it's a giant void in people's souls. You have to fill it with something. And if that's aliens, if that's hairy hominids, if it's something beyond the norm, we need it, you know?
Yeah. And isn't Jesus a cryptid in his own right?
I believe that he was dead. If he was around, he was a cryptid.
Could be.
He's right here in my heart, guys.
Yes, he is. He lives right there. He's knocking on your door.
Live from your grave.
Yeah, you also wrote a book about cursed objects. There's a question, right? Because we have friends that are, I'm friends with like people that are attached to Zach Bagans, right? Mm. And are my friends, the New Kirks, they're great, right? Yeah. And they're kind of in the world now. They talk a lot about cursed objects. When you were working with cursed objects, like, did you bring any into your home? Did you bring anything around? Or like, it's like, how do you feel like about like, because like the hell are you, like the New Kirks are firmly against any sort of transportation or purchasing of cursed objects.
Sure. Because it sounds scary to do.
Oh, fuck shit up. But did you have any?
They also would make a competitor to them. So that's a problem as well. Nice. You buy too much of it.
Yes. What do you do with it? Yeah. With like, how did you go about those processes? Did you just listen to people's stories or did you handle any objects?
So I did. So as part of it, there's a whole section of that book called The Business of Cursed Objects. The New Kirks are in there and Zaphis, Bagans is in there. I went to his amazing haunted museum, by the way, which I went in there not thinking I was going to like it at all and coming out just completely disturbed and loving it.
Oh, awesome.
And then I bought one. So also the eBay trade. If you go on eBay and type in cursed object right now, there's going to be scores of things for sale and they're going to be for sale at pretty high prices. So I went in there and finally, it was funny, I went in there to like buy one. And didn't buy one right away. And I got retargeted ads all over my internet experience saying, like, eBay, we have cursed objects. Yeah, come get our cursed objects. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I ended up buying one. I bought one and brought it to my house. Didn't tell my family.
What was it?
Huh?
What was it?
It was, I have it here somewhere.
Yeah, because I have a little haunted box. I had people brought me nails from Boleskine House. Like, I have all that type of shit, but I kind of waved shade over.
All right,
over.
We got a little cursed object here. It looks like a little pug.
It's a little brass bulldog. And the person who sold it to me was so good. They were like, my father bought this from Asia somewhere, brought us all nothing but misfortune, harm, whatever. If you want this, be careful what you wish for. And really played it up, right? I bought it. I won the auction. I guess I think it was the only bidding. And when she sent it to me, she sent me with like warnings all over the box saying, be careful what you wish for, be careful with this thing. And when I realized, and I got a little trepidatious, honestly, again, I'm a skeptic, but there's some scientific proof that cursed objects can work. But Even then I was like, what if I'm wrong? It doesn't matter what I believe if I'm wrong. So if I bring this cursed object to my house and I say, it could hurt my family. And I also took it with us on vacation. But there's all this kind of stuff. She wrote stuff in the boxes, be careful what you wish for, here it is. And what I realized what I was doing was not buying a cursed object, but buying the experience of buying a cursed object, right? So usually cursed objects are, you go to Chinatown, you find that one shop with everything's piled around, you try to buy something and the owner says, I'm not selling you that. It's the beginning of Gremlins, basically.
Yes.
I won't sell you that. Nice. I know it has a price tag, but I'm not selling you that. It's not for sale. It's in the store, but it's not for sale. And then you finally convince them to let you have it and you take it home and then whatever, all hell breaks loose. And you can't get that anymore these days, right? The world's too connected. And
it's
right
difficult.
Now, yeah. And just buying buy now at eBay is a very sad experience. Very convenient, but very sad experience. So she did this entire thing with her emails to me and her box crawls to make me think, or maybe it was a legit sincere warning, but at the very least gave me the ambiance that I was bringing something forbidden into my house. So it was a lot of fun. And then nothing bad happened that year, unfortunately. But I just sat there right in there. I wrote the entire book, that thing looking at me.
Yeah, that's what makes a cursed object cursed? Is it like an experience that happened around it, or did someone cough on it all weird?
Yeah, there's multiple ways. There's purposeful. So somebody with the power can imbue it with the ability to hurt people, right? That can just be somebody like a shaman, or it could be even a person just using their mental will to say, this is going to bring cursed. It could be like it was around the scene of a tragedy, so it kind of sucked up all that negative energy like a battery. Or, you know, like Shirley Jackson's Hill House, right? It could have just been born bad, right? All the way down to its Made in China sticker. It was just born bad. So those are kind of the three ways I discovered that a cursed object is cursed. So, sweet. And then of course there's like the scientific version of a cursed object. The nocebo is basically if you think something's going to harm you, it'll harm you. We're able to trick our bodies into being harmed. Just like a placebo, we can trick our bodies into being healed.
Right.
The exact opposite is also possibly true.
Yeah. That's very interesting. But so did you find in your searches, there were like, well, this sounds cursed as hell. Like this was like, was there one of them or any of them that you were like, well, there's something here. They obviously believe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, my favorite example, and this is also going to be a very boring example because I know you guys probably know it, is the Hope Diamond. I grew up in the DC area and that was like my local museum and I was always like going there. But this thing has an actual provenance of hundreds of years old. We know exactly where it was at any given time. And it was surrounded by tragedy the entire time, like documented tragedies, not just like kind of legends that nobody has documents for, documented tragedies. So, and it's the perfect cursed object, right? It's small. You could lose it. You could actually slip it in somebody's pocket. It's expensive. So it's only
beautiful too. It's got like an allure to it.
Yeah. And it's crossed the world. It's been in the hands of monarchs. That one has the most legit story in the world. And now that it's in the Smithsonian, or it has been for decades, you know, you can blame all the ills of the country on it for sure.
Excellent. You know what? I'm really catching a theme that I really appreciate, which is you're trying to examine and live in a world that, like, as you said before, with your cryptid kind of like your theme, it's like you let mystery in. Let's look for the mystery and not necessarily like dig it up, but kind of like be in it, experience it.
Does it make the world better at the end of the day? And honestly, a lot of this stuff does. It makes the world more interesting. It gives people stuff to do. It's like, it's again, very few of us are happy with just making our lawn nice every single day. You know, there's something more interesting out there.
Absolutely. And that's another, the lawn gnome.
The lawn gnome.
One of the more famous cryptids out there.
Yes.
There's an entire town dedicated to gnomes in Minnesota. They had, it's just all over there, like the park in the middle of town. They add to it every year. It's like their cryptid.
That's cute,
scary.
Though.
Scary.
That's kind of fun, though. I like that.
Gnomes are always going to freak me out.
Dolls. Yeah. Do you think that Edgar Allan Poe, and then you wrote that whole thing about Edgar Allan Poe. What was the mystery there? Was there anything that, or was it kind of just a sad truth of what it takes to be a lonely, weird author?
No, the mystery there for me was how does a random, not random, but like a poor, busted poet become an international phenomenon even today, right? We have a football team named after it. We have shows about him every single second. There's a Christian Bale movie coming out here any second about Poe.
Oh, no kidding.
Everybody recognizes, Gillian Anderson's in it too. But every single person recognizes Poe. Why? He was a broke poet who wrote spooky stuff and also comedy. He wrote mostly comedy, honestly.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why he should be as famous as he is. And for some reason he is. There's something about him. He's more famous than most things. And like, I don't know. He's been on The Simpsons. He's been everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the big mystery for me. How does this guy go from random 19th century broke poet who was unknown in his day mostly to one of the most biggest phenomenon in culture, continually big phenomenon in culture.
He's probably kind of upset that like he was treated like dog shit in real life, and then he died, and everyone's like, "We love this guy.
We liked him." Well, because he was a supreme weirdo, right? And then he did die a mysterious death.
Yes.
That always kind of helps. And then he looks the part. I think there's something too, especially in a, like, we really like somebody who fits the idea of what it is that they do. Mm-hmm. Like, we like that. I think, like, you know, what Stephen King does, like, he helps, like, he made a big scary house. You know, and he lives up in it. There's something to it. Like, you know, he's walking the walk, and we love that.
Well, not anymore. I did follow Stephen King on Twitter, and he said about the World Cup in Qatar. He said, if you need alcohol to enjoy a game, you have a problem. And I said, you're Stephen King. You're a drug addict. And you're an alcoholic. Please tell me.
Do you feel that you're mystery now? Do you think that, like, how has mystery affected your life? Like, is it one of the things that now, like, you as a person, like, do you, like, I don't know. Like, do you feel like it makes you, like, experiencing all of these things?
Well, it sounds like you're a good guy to hang out at the bar with. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, until I get too much drink, for sure. But yeah, no, I love it. It makes me go places. Like, that's a big part of all my books, even though they're research topics, they're all also travelogues at the end of the day. So if I'm writing a book about Edgar Allan Poe, I'm in every state he's been to. I'm in London visiting his stuff. Cryptids, I'm going across the country looking at towns. It was my book about Salem, Mass. I lived in Salem for a month. Like, I go awesome. Places. It literally adds to my life to go, like, I make friends as a result of these book projects. So it's made my life better. And I assume it makes a lot of other people's lives better, or we wouldn't absolutely. Get obsessed with it.
Well, it's so definitely cool. Better to do cryptid zoology than storm the Capitol.
I'm really proud.
That's what I always say.
That's right. Really
proud. J.W. Walker, thank you so much. And also, you didn't answer. Sex, which cryptid?
Oh, man. Hold on. Hold on. Oh, man,
this is your wife will let you get out of jail free with this
one. Yeah, because you go, it's not real. It doesn't exist, honey. Yeah.
I'm going to have to say, I'm going to go back to, I'll take the Wolfman of Mobile. I'll take a female werewolf.
Yeah, because honestly, because it's got the good parts and you don't have to worry about the barbed penises. You don't got to be, worry about like a snapping weird, like cloaca or anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Little hair never bothered me. You know, it's fine.
See? Excellent.
The United States of Cryptids, a tour of American myths and monsters. J.W. Walker, check out this book. If it's just around the holiday season, is it not? Maybe it's a gift. Perhaps.
Maybe. Honestly, that would be nice. That's a great idea.
JW, thank you so much for being on the show, man. You're wonderful.
Thanks, man. I appreciated everything. Yeah, this was fun, for sure.
Live from your grave.
All right, everyone, there it was, our conversation with J.W. Walker.
He was very funny. Again, handsome.
A lovely man.
Very handsome for a cryptid attached person.
He had a wife. He's married.
I mean, a lot of them have wives.
Do
but
they?
It's because it allows them to go have more free liberal fun with their buddies when they're out on the trail. Right?
I think
about
see.
We ain't gay. We're just out here. We're just seeking warmth.
Absolutely.
We ain't trying to be like, I'm married. I'm married to a full-blooded woman. Very big woman.
There's no rules when you're hunting cryptids.
Nope.
The United States of Cryptids, a tour of American myths and monsters. Check out that book, y'all.
And if you're in the Los Angeles area, come and check out me and old big old Hammy Hams, Ed Larson himself. We're going to be hosting a classy night out pre-New Year's Eve celebration. It's December 30th at the PAC, 8 p.m. It's December 30th, 8 p.m. at the PAC. Tickets are still available on the website. It's all going to be cavalcade of a bunch of hooved us yelling at you. And just don't wear anything you're afraid to get wet. That's not true. That's not true. Honestly, I hate to be wet. Why would I do that to you? Ham.
Thank you all so much for supporting us, J.W. Walker. Thank you for being on the show. And we'll just be back with you a little bit later on. Thanks for supporting our Patreon.
Thanks for your money.
We'll talk to you soon. Hail yourselves.
Hail the Titan. Let me in your home.
Congratulations, everybody.
I'm cold.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors. You can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.